You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together. Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Precision Powerlifting Systems. So this is the first video I've done in a few weeks. We've had a couple national championship meets, one in Florida, one in California, so I've been traveling, doing some of that stuff. So I figured this would be a good point to pick up. So our programs, they run in phases. So phase one, we do less max effort work. So it's only in a 4-week block, you'll have 4 total max effort lifts, 2 squat, 2 bench. We don't pull heavy in the first phase. And the reason for this is a lot of the like OG powerlifters that I've spoken with, they've told me that they wish they had pulled less when they were training. They think it would have saved their back a little bit more. So we remove the heavy deadlifts from this phase. And usually we do each phase for 4 to 8 weeks, and it tends to be more towards that 8-week period of time. If we don't have a meet, our phase 3 will only be 4 weeks because there's no need to really like push it that hard without a competition. So we kind of save the 8-week phase 3s for competitions. But in that first phase, no heavy deadlifts. So we still deadlift on day 3, but it's after volume squats and there'll be light volume deadlifts. So we're still working on technique and doing the motions and stuff, but we remove the heavy deadlifts. And then when we get into phase 2, we bring back in the heavy deadlifts and the frequency increases. So now on day 3, you'll bench and deadlift, and there'll be a max effort deadlift every other week in phase 2 on day 3. And then day 4 will be the volume squats and deadlifts. So our frequency increases, our volume increases, and the heavy pulls come back in. So in phase 2, we get 6 max effort lifts in a 4-week block. And then phase 3, we don't rotate week to week between max effort and reps for the squat and the bench. So day 1 is a max effort squat every week in phase 3, and day 2 is a max effort bench every week in phase 3. The deadlift is a max effort lift every other week. So we don't pull as heavy as frequently as we do with the squat and the bench. But in that block alone, in 4 weeks, you're going to have about 10 max effort lifts, 2 deadlifts, and then 8 total squat and bench. So 8 plus 2, there's your 10. So the way that we use max effort lifts, so I'm not a big fan of just randomly selecting a max effort lift. And I get the argument that the goal is just a strain or whatever, but there's a lot more to it. And there's stuff that we can be working on with the max effort lifts, because this is the comp specificity that we're looking for, right? It's going to have the same psychological arousal, the same type of strain. But what I like to do is I like to put those two scenarios on top of some type of skill development. So let's try to figure something out in that environment, right? So like, for example, earlier on, let's say after a meet, I think right now I gave Alyssa, she has cambered bar box squats, and I could even add bands to this, right? So she's never really used the cambered bar before. The box, which I remove box squats closer to a competition, they're still in there, but they make up a very, very small percentage of lifts. And the reason for this is because the technique's a little bit different, and I like to really get like specific. So like when we get into this, you'll see this is all set up as a pyramid, and it kind of goes through each phase, and we get more and more specific as we go along. So I kind of removed the box squats, but they play a bigger role earlier on in our phases. So with all of those variables going on, you have to pay attention, right? So if we want to get, so our upper motor neurons are responsible for our learning, right? And we want to get their attention in order to develop a skill. So complexity, novelty, and unpredictability are going to enhance our skill development, because it's going to gain the attention of the upper motor neurons. So in the case of Alyssa doing cambered bar box squats, and if we throw accommodating resistance on there too, we have 3 variables like that that are going to be complex, novel, and it's unpredictable because she hasn't done them or doesn't do them frequently enough to really develop a really focused skill in those lifts. So with all the variety, we use them to build our main lifts. I don't necessarily care about them getting better at those things. I care about them getting better in those scenarios to improve our competition lifts. So we're never really gonna have cambered bar box squats with bands enough to really get elite level skills within that lift, but it's still a squat and there's still a lot of things. It's still a box squat and there's still a lot of similar pieces to it, but we're just changing the environment a little bit just to get people to pay attention. So earlier on, we're just trying to develop greater awareness underneath the barbell, greater skill lifting, and of course attack some physical weaknesses and stuff that we want to bring up. So I came up with this max effort pyramid, basically, right? And again, earlier phases are going to have more variety. And as a competition draws near, our phases are long-term planning is 4 to 6 months. So when I decided to have a more structured long-term plan, I figured most lifters compete 2 to 3 times a year. So there's your 4 to 6 months, right? So like we just have these blocks that we're going to run. And I try not to let, unless there's like a world championship or something like that, I try to make them space out their competitions enough so that we can really build in between them and really work on some things. So we're not always just focused on the next meet. At times, if they want to shortchange that, we just don't peak the same way. We still remain in a building phase throughout that process. And then whatever we hit is what we hit on that day. And that kind of comes from Shaco. So he would have his lifters compete 4 to 6 times a year, but they would only peak for 1 to 2 of them. So they would pick their most important 1 to 2 competitions, and those would be the ones that they really like put their attention towards hitting their best lifts at. But all the other ones, they just kind of use as heavy training days with judges. So using that same token, if like one of my lifters wants to compete in a meet because they have friends doing it or it's local or something like that, but they had just competed in one that we really put an emphasis on, we'll still take the normal building phase and we'll just kind of use it more as let's go out there and let's just compete. Let's see what we can do on that day, but we're not going to peak for it or anything like that. And that's one of the other things too, is like you just realize that you can't peak for every competition that you want to do. It takes a psychological and a physical toll on the person. And you got to have enough time to like really build something. So like Jess Ward just competed at USPA Nationals and she finished tied for third, lost the medal on a bodyweight tiebreaker. And she could do Worlds in November, but spacing it out until next Nationals in May is just going to allow her to have a greater time to like really build and really work on some weaknesses that we need to shore up to make sure that, you know, we get better and we can increase our positioning at the next Nationals. And then from there, we could shortchange a block and do Worlds if that's what we decide to do there. But her competitors and her, between first place and where she was only separated by like 5 or 7.5 kilos. It was very, very close. She lost on the last pull for a silver medal. So for her, if her competitors are going to do Worlds in November, they're going to have to shortchange training blocks, right? So this is just going to allow us to build, really shore up those weaknesses, and hopefully, you know, come that time, yeah, we might not be competing at that competition, but hopefully we're gaining some ground and we're putting some space between us and our competitors at that point. So we get a few extra weeks or a block or two of training on top of what they're able to do, even though they're competing and stuff. And then after their meet, they're probably going to take a little bit of time off or go a little bit easier. So we'll be in, you know, full training mode by that point. So hopefully we can get some space between us, especially where it's all really, really close. And the goal is to win a world championship and to be able to sustain that that high level of performance over a long period of time. But when it comes to our max effort stuff, so I'm a big believer that your program should be a part of your identity as a person. So if your identity is, you know, Harry Potter and magic and Dungeons and Dragons, maybe more computer data-driven type stuff is gonna be your, kind of what you're looking to base your programming around, right? Because it just kind of fits your nerdy personality. I'm half kidding with that or not, whatever. But for me, I tend to be a more aggressive personality. So I think our programs having a more aggressive structure to them is really important. And I think it matches my personality well. And at the same time, it allows the lifters to develop a character underneath the barbell so that they're put in stressful situations and they're gonna have to develop that resiliency. They're developing the mindfulness underneath the bar, that awareness of being underneath the bar because of all the novelty and complexity. So it also works on, I did a video, I think it's called Strive to Be Great, where I talk about our pyramid of greatness and what it takes to be great and the aspects of it that I feel are most important. So our programs go in line with those, and this is why the pyramid for the max effort stuff as well. So earlier phases would be the bottom of our pyramid. And here, this is a straight bar, right? 3+ variations, so lots of variation here, right? Or a specialty bar plus lots of variation. So like I said, a camera bar, box squat with bands would be this bottom level, okay? So for the bottom two levels of the pyramid, I like bands better than chains. So you always see this argument on the internet, what's better, bands or chains? Well, it depends on the situation, what you're trying to train. So bands, one, so why they're further from a competition, they beat you up more, okay? So I've talked before about how bands and chains can deload positionally, right? So at the bottom of the squat where we have the greatest amount of, where we have the least amount of leverage and the greatest amount of effort that we have to put into the barbell. The bands and the chains can deload some of that weight and it can make it easier to recover. But one thing you gotta remember about the bands is the overspeed eccentrics. So because of the overspeed eccentrics, they're harder to recover from. So they can beat you up a little bit more. Plus the overload, if you're using a straight bar with bands a lot on your shoulders and stuff like that, it can become quite a lot. So I like them further away from a competition for that reason. Two, the bands, they dictate bar path. So if you're squatting, it's going to pull the bar straight up and down, right? That's good and bad. Closer to a competition, we need to be able to control the sway of the bar, right? So like on a squat, if we pitch forward, right, the bands are going to kind of pull it down into that groove. On the bench, they're going to pull it down into that groove. The deadlift, it doesn't matter as much. Like you could do bands on a deadlift closer to a competition. I think there's a lot of benefits to that. But for the squat and the bench, because it dictates bar path, I like it further away. So one, it can kind of help groove that bar path, and then you learn how to stabilize it and push through with that same force. But it builds explosiveness at the same time too. So bands beat you up a little bit more, they control the bar path, but they have a lot of efficacy into getting people stronger. So I like them for the earlier phases. And closer to a competition, chains, for the squat and the bench, I think just have greater carryover for the competition lifts themselves, just because they're a little bit more specific to the competition lift. Yes, the chain's gonna swing a little bit, but it still deloads the bottom. You're still putting the adequate foursome into the barbell. We use between 40 and 80 pounds of chain. It's not often that we use more than that. And I don't think I've ever used less than that amount. So we kind of do that type of stuff closer to a competition. So again, bottom, what we're trying to do in the bottom tier, so this is their phase one lifts basically, is again, build some awareness, get a greater skill set and develop some weaknesses that we identified doing the comp lifts in phase three or when we competed. And this would be after the competition. So even on the day three lifts where we get the squat and the deadlift, you know, I think Alyssa's doing safety squat bar squats with a pause halfway up. So you could see in her third attempt at USAPL Nationals, she grinded out 160 kilos, but you could see, you know, a few inches out of the hole, she started to lose the back position, right? So this is an area that we can strengthen, right? So like with the safety squat bar, yes, the specificity of the movement's a little bit different because the bar is different. But because the bar, where it sits, it's getting a greater moment arm for those thoracic extensors. So it's gonna build a physical weakness by doing this. And technically, it's still gonna teach her how to drive her head back into the harness, be uncomfortable in those positions, and really strengthen those isometric positions that we're holding. But this is more of a back builder than, you know, looking for the technique carryover with a straight bar or whatever. But her developing, and this is the argument that I think I have with coaches quite a bit when it comes to specificity. It doesn't necessarily have to look like the competition lift to be specific, right? It's all specific to what? Yes, if I'm trying to develop a competition lift because we have a competition in a few weeks, this variation would probably be a bad idea. But I'm trying to build her upper back and build a position in the squat. the safety squat bar squat with a pause in this position is specific to what I'm trying to build. That is specificity. Using a straight low bar position here is not as specific to what I'm looking to build under the with this scenario and with this goal in mind. So it's gonna be specific to your goals. So bottom tier, we're developing awareness, building a skill set, and again, trying to, you know, shore up some physical weaknesses that we have in certain positions and stuff as well. So there's a lot of variation here, and it also, it's just like recovery, right? The whole reason that every movement is varied within the human body is for that reason, is to disperse the load more evenly amongst the joint. So if we're constantly doing the same thing over and over, that's just where a lot of the overuse stuff comes from. So using a camera bar and a safety squat bar is gonna probably save the elbows a little bit, right? We could use a football bar on bench. I think Alyssa's using a buffalo bar for the bench, so we're really working on the bottom position of that bench press, but the way that it just like sets the shoulders, you can get a little deficit pec work basically while kind of grooving a nice bar path using that barbell. So using a lot of variation here is just, it's for recovery, building certain skills and building up weaknesses. And then as we move along, we want to make sure that we're getting more and more specific so that we can take all of these skills and these new strengths and we can put them together into the total package of hopefully competing in a competition, you know, within 6 months or when we test our lifts during that period of time. But during the earlier phases, I don't put many comp lifts in there. There may be like comp lift specific stuff. So like Jess Ward, one of the things that we have to do, she just missed her squat. Like it was so close. And if she had hit that squat, she would have taken home gold at Nationals. So one of the things that we need to work on for her technique of the squat is one, getting her grip wider and getting the bar a little bit lower to get her upper back in a better position. Because at the end of the day, this is a sport of millimeters. You need to control every millimeter to the best of your ability to give yourself the greatest opportunity to lift the weight. So for her, she's gonna have some low bar work in the squat because I wanna work on widening the grip and I wanna work on lowering the bar with lighter weight. So she'll get some like pauses or something like that. There'll still be variation to the lifts themselves, but we're gonna get a straight bar on her back and start working on those positions now under lighter loads that we'll build up later on. And in that case there, what I tend to do a lot is, because I wanna build up her upper back as well, right? So ways to do this, safety squat bar is great for this. High bar squats are fine for this as well. But what I'll do then, if I'm using a straight bar for that day three squat where I normally would use a specialty bar, is I might use a specialty bar now, like safety squat bar, good mornings might be something that I decide to use. Or we do some type of like, I typically won't do this in phase one, but as the phases move along, maybe like safety squat bar, wide stance box squats are, they're a variation that we'll use, but we'll use them as an auxiliary lift as opposed to a main lift. And I would do this for like higher reps. So maybe we put like 3x8 or something like that. And I don't give them a percentage. They just kind of like work up to a set of 8. Hopefully it's something heavy if they're feeling good, and they just kind of use based off of how they're feeling. And then we just progress it over time. So we get this starting point. And then from there, you know, if we work up to a heavy set of 8, for example, the next week, let's try to get the 2 or 3 sets all at that heavier set. And then the next week, let's try to beat it. And if we can't beat it, then we move on to 6s, something like that. So we can just build progress in based kind of off of that stuff. And it's pretty easy to do. Because I do want to strengthen the upper back too. It's not just a matter of getting the bar in the right position. We need to make those muscles stronger, because when she's standing there, the upper back is having a hard time supporting all that weight. You know, at 148 pounds body weight, squatting 370 pounds, that's a big squat. So we're going to make sure the upper back is capable of supporting that weight. And also the upper back controls bar path out of the hole. So where she pitched forward just a hair, she lost all that speed. So if the upper back, if it's strong enough to push that barbell back and keep it over the middle of our feet, we're going to then be able to use our leg and hip drive to move the weight with more speed. And that little bit of extra speed gets her by that sticking point where she lost that weight and she was really like holding it there. That little bit extra speed locks out that weight. So we got to work on those couple of things, and that's what we're going to do on that day. So of course there's going to be some variability within how we program these lifts. So then we move up into tier 2 of the pyramid here. So this is basically a straight bar plus 2 variations, right? So this could be a high bar wide stance with bands, right? Or high bar pin squat, or high bar wide stance pin squat, high bar wide stance with bands, like whatever there. And also just using a specialty bar, right? And the specialty bar can replace the straight bar. But if we go safety squat bar, wide stance squat with bands, we're getting into, you know, further and further away from the comp lift, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a place in these later phases. This is just more of a heuristic to keep in mind of, hey, we're getting further and further away from the competition lift the more we're adding to this, and just understanding where its place, you know, because I do think it's still important to do that, but just understanding where its place lies within a more organized training structure. So here it's usually, you know, I might do a specialty bar box squat here or something like that, and I would still consider that in that tier two here, because the weight in the hole is going to be a lot more similar and stuff. So, you know, again, this is just something to kind of follow. And here, so this is where our comp lifts can come in also. And 3 to 5 rep max comp lift. So this might be like in my bench shirt, I might work up to a 3 to 5 RM max effort lift on these days in that tier two max effort type of lift. I don't tend to do that much for the squat, the deadlift, just because it beats me up quite a bit. I like to do every other week. So just like I do with my lifters every other week, I do like sets and reps at a given intensity. So I like to get my 3s to 5s just to really build some skill and some momentum and get some volume and stuff in there. But you could absolutely do a 3 to 5 rep max with a comp lift in this phase here. And then as we move even further up, we get straight bar plus one variation. In here, so now tier three, and then obviously with the comp lifts, I like chains a lot more than bands here. Again, chains don't beat you up the same way. You're still getting that force, and the bar path is going to be a lot more similar. In fact, it's probably even just a hair harder to control, but it's not swinging too much. So then when you remove the chains after doing some heavy lifts with chains, so again, like 40 to 80 pounds of chain, which isn't a ton of chain, but it's enough to make a difference. You kind of remove it and they're putting the same force behind the barbell, and it tends to go pretty well. So again, I like chains greater than bands here. And then your comp lift, your 2 to 3 rep max comp lift would fit into this tier of the max effort lifts as well. I know there's some carryover with the 3s or whatever, and it's just, you know, nothing's just, this isn't really black and white, right? So like you're painting a picture, right? And you're kind of like laying the outline, but then when you start like really putting the pieces together, there's some blending that has to happen so you can actually see what the picture is that you're painting. And that's where there's going to be some overlap with some of this stuff here. I tend to not use specialty bars too much later in these phases. So what this might look like, phase one for 2 waves, so 8 weeks would be the bottom of the pyramid. And then phase two, what we might have is wave one, kind of more specialty bar and maybe like a specialty bar box squat. And then phase two, we might have like high bar pin squat or something. Like we start getting more and more specific. So, you know, even though this is like tier two here, phase two might be broken up where we even get more specific within the tiers themselves, right? So a specialty bar box squat is not as specific as a, you know, straight bar with two variations, right? Wide stance pin squat or something. Or a straight bar wide stance box squat, like whatever it is, it's going to get more and more specific as the phases go on. And then after that, the specialty bars kind of go away, and we just kind of use them for good mornings and other variations. So we don't necessarily completely get rid of them. We just get rid of them with the main lifts and then start using them for other pieces of the program. And then of course our comp lifts. So our comp lifts are a very, very small percentage of our max effort lifts. We literally only do them at the end of a phase three to kind of gauge where we're at without a competition. And I don't even peak them without a competition. It's just more of just getting some exposures. With a competition, they'll test their deadlift about 3 weeks out. Well, 2.5 weeks out or so. They'll test their deadlift. And then the following week, they test their squat and their bench. And then we kind of have a lighter week, lighter taper week before the competition. And then, of course, they hit all their lifts at the competition. So that percentage of competition lifts is very, very small compared to our total number of lifts throughout the entire program. And the reason for this is comp lifts just beat you up more psychologically and physically. You can only do them so many times. So you got to pick and choose your spots where you're actually using a straight comp lift. And before that, we might do like a wide stance squat with very little chains, like 40 pounds of chain. Remember what I said, there's some blending that might go here. So phase three is going to use a lot of this stuff. So it could be just, you know, low bar, wide stance, 40 pounds of chain, something like that. And then putting it all together. So every fourth week we get competition lifts at 80%. And there'll be doubles or triples or something like that. And hopefully they're advancing every 4 weeks. So let's say wave one, we get 80% for 4x2 in a squat, right? Hopefully we can go 5x2 wave two, 4x3 wave three, 5x3 wave four, right? And now we're getting into the comp phase. So you're seeing some progress in the comp lifts, what their work capacity, all of those stuff just coming together. And then hopefully we can start like really pushing that into the competition phases to hit PRs. What I've noticed from doing this, oh, and also, I know I've mentioned this a lot, but every other week we get rep work of the same. So like, let's say Alyssa's doing Cameron Bar box squats and she hits her max effort week one. Everybody's told to leave 5 or 10 pounds on the bar week one. And then week two, she'll have, let's say 70% of week one's max effort for a 5x5. So it gives her some reps, something to work on, really like focus on and like visualize being able to hit a 5 pound PR from week one. Of course it's smoke and mirrors a little bit because she was capable of hitting that 5 pounds week one. And then week three, she beats week one by 5 pounds, but that builds momentum. And the more you're hitting 5 pounds and you're gaining that momentum, it just sets the internal environment up for skill development, for learning, for motivation, for all of those things to develop over time. So if you're making good decisions and stuff, you're gonna be rewarded with PRs. So 5 pound PR, 5 pound PR, 5 pound PR. And what I've started to do is our comp cycle is the same every single time. So we have an 8 week comp cycle, which is all phase three, right? So max effort lifts all the way through like that. And then the deadlifts rotate. The deadlifts do start to taper off a little bit longer before the test. So instead of having a max effort lift the 2 weeks before a test, they might get 90% of a previous max effort for 3x1 with a variation, or 90% of their all-time best for 3x1. They'll be max effort technically, but it's not going to be something that's going to be as physically or psychologically as daunting as actually testing a lift that close. Where a squat, we might use like very slight variations and still hitting weights very close to what we're going to hit. Where the deadlift, we back off just a little bit more to allow for recovery and stuff. And that tends to work really well. So we alternate back and forth, we build momentum, we do all of those things, right? That Strive to Be Great video I did kind of explains that in greater detail. And what I've realized from the way that we've been doing things is there's two types of absolute strength, right? There's your top end strength, so something, you know, the most you've ever hit in the gym, but then there's your stable top end strength. And what's more important, what we really want is we want to see that stable top end strength increase. I don't really care about what you can hit under the greatest of scenarios in the gym on one given day, right? I care what you can hit traveling 3,000 miles to the desert in July, cutting weight and competing out of your comfort zone. I care what you can hit there. So like for Jess, yeah, she just barely missed her best ever squat, right? But 363 she can hit under any circumstance. So the fact that her stable top end strength is so close to her absolute top end strength is a really good sign something big's there. We just gotta figure something out. She smoked her best ever bench and she probably could have hit a PR that day. Like if we were in the gym and we could have taken a fourth attempt type of thing, she would have hit her best. She would have hit a PR that day. And her deadlift, she hit her best ever deadlift on the platform with pressure. She had to pull it to take the lead, which gave her first place at the time. Her back was bothering her a little bit from the squats. She had missed a squat, so you get those thoughts around. And this was 8.5 hours after the meet started. So by the time she the meet started to when she was pulling her third deadlift was 8.5 hours in between, and she pulled her best ever. So that's a really stable top end number. So the fact that she can hit her best bench and her best deadlift under any circumstance is a really good sign that we can put more on there too. And then the squat, we just got to figure out. And that's just that little technique thing that we got to adjust there. And then hopefully when that happens, that next 5 pound PR is a little bit more stable. Same thing with Alyssa. Alyssa's hitting her best gym lifts on the platform, traveling to a national level meet under national level circumstances. And she went 9 for 9 hitting those PRs. So, you know, being able to do those things under those scenarios shows us that we're doing everything well. And of course there's things that we can do better. And in the next video, maybe I'll get into like how to build the auxiliary lifts. So we've been doing good mornings just all the way through the whole cycles, but I want to rotate them in and out with some other ideas that I have where we kind of use some of the variations that we use for like max effort lifts and stuff for much higher rep work, to really like work on a weakness. Cause when you actually start to like break these down, you'll notice that like absolute loads are varied greatly, right? You'll find a weakness on somebody, but the absolute loads are so far removed from their competition lifts. So let's just say, for example, somebody, I've never had this as an example, but just to be able to picture it, let's say somebody's high bar squat is way under their regular low bar squat, right? Even though that this would be a, you know, tier 3 variation, just a high bar squat, the fact that the absolute load drops so much might move it lower into one of the other tiers because it's further away from the competition lift, because it's further away from the competition lift itself. So absolute load matters for this stuff too. So let's say the high bar squat is just so much lower. To me, that might, there might show to be some efficacy to do it instead of good mornings. Let's do high bar squats as a back down 3x10, right? Some really high rep stuff, build it up, whatever, right? Down there. Somebody's sumo deadlift is way behind their conventional, right? Some safety squat bar, wide stance box squats might be a great variation to throw in somewhere and do it for higher rep stuff and really just like build it up. So kind of rotating the good mornings through with some of these other like supplemental lifts, I think can go a long way. So keep in mind absolute loads when you're thinking about these heuristics here. And if there is a big gap, and I don't have like a heuristic for, you know, how big the gap is, because it depends on the person. So some people are okay with not touching weights that are close to their absolute best, close to testing. Others need to handle heavier weights. And sometimes it's just a feeling, right? So some people just, if I could give, you know, let's say Alyssa squats 360 pounds, you know, if I can, Jess Ward squats 370 pounds, if I can give them, you know, 80 pounds of chain on top of 315, they can handle those loads on max effort weight and they're feeling the heavier weight on their back. They're controlling the swing of that heavier weight. Like for them, that's okay, right? Even though that 315, you know, it's still like close to 90%. Of their best in the hole. So they're still getting that like max effort type lift between strain coming up, weight in the hole, like all of that stuff, but just feeling the weight. They don't necessarily need to see, you know, the three plates plus change on there. They just need to feel that weight on their back. So that's always something too, where the chains can kind of come in and just kind of replace some of the load, give it a little bit more variation, because you can't just comp lift all the time and just kind of let you flow into a competition lift itself. And that's what the program should do. It should flow, right? There should be this, you start somewhere and there's just this nice transition all the way through to the comp lifts. The other part of this too is the psychological aspects of it. People don't really care about their cambered bar box squat with bands if they don't PR it, right? They just kind of, oh, that's what I got today, haha, whatever, and they move on. They care when they don't PR a comp lift. And then everything in between, they care a little bit more and more about, right? A high bar squat should be pretty close to your comp squat, right? So like you should be able to be hitting PRs in these variations closer to the comp lifts, and all of them you should be able to do, but there's less psychological arousal in these bottom ones. And then we build up the psychological arousal into a competition phase where we just start really hammering down those mental aspects of competing with all the max effort lifts and just really getting into that groove of, this is what we're here to do. We're going to fucking get after it. And again, I think the biggest telltale sign that this has been working really, really well is just the stable top end numbers and how well we're hitting these numbers at meets. I haven't had a really drop third attempts for people at meets in a while. And granted, I haven't had a ton of people competing during this period of time, but there was a period of time where I'm constantly dropping, you know, 5 kilos on a third attempt, 2.5, like there's just, and they're grinding them out. And like here, it just has gone much, much better in terms of like stability of performance. So we're definitely on the right track there. I think we can do a little bit better with some of the things that we're doing. But in general, I think this is a really good heuristic to follow. And of course, you know, we're talking generally, and when you get to the individual, there's going to be some adjustments that you need to make. So like I said, like I might use wide stance squats with a small amount of chain in this here, even though I just wrote like straight bar plus one, you know, something like that. I don't really use specialty bars. Cause it's not really, I wouldn't necessarily even call it two variations because I mean, I might use 80 pounds of chain depending on how much the person lifts, but it's going to be something that's still in the hole above 90%. So it's going to still be, we're here, that might not be the case. We might be getting closer to that, like 85%, even maybe less at times, in the hole for a squat or something with the plus two variation. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily work so like black and white. And of course, each individual is going to have different strengths and weaknesses and different preferences closer to a meet and stuff like that. So as you start to like narrow it down for the individual, the generality of this kind of blends a little bit more together. But overall, I think it's something to keep in mind when you're writing programs and stuff. And if you have any questions, just reach out and I'll answer those for you. But you can follow along on Instagram. It's KWKNRT, Precision Powerlifting Systems.